Okay, you've heard staff recommendation. You've heard from the actual manager. We did ask Veris to go ahead and take a look at this and offer their opinion as well. We know this was a little bit non-standard. We had staff run on this one, but we did ask what they saw. Did they agree? Did they concur? And as you might expect, they have a little bit different viewpoint on it, but I'll let Scott kind of opine on from his very low chair, apparently.
There you go.
Tough room.
There you go.
One of the tallest chairs I've ever
things
had.
We
seen
do.
In Contra Costa.
Yeah.
Positioning is very important. So we have a private equity group that's run by a guy named Louis Kleist, who is pretty deep knowledge in all things private assets. And he took a look at the deal. We also have a strategic research group run by a guy named Ian Toner, and he's opined on the opportunity. So we're not as enthusiastic about the overall opportunity, but that's worth noting. But frankly, I think is neither here nor there from your all's assessment, right? I think that a lot of different people have a lot of different viewpoints on the opportunity. You guys need to know that if you're going to take the risk of the opportunity, are you doing it in a good, prudent way? I think that based on our view, as described by Lewis, Angelo Gordon, solid firm, the way that you guys are going about it, he thinks is good and reasonable, and you have a lot of downside protection. There are some risks that were identified in the assessment that are mitigated through very specific factors. The optionality of the drawdown is one that we think makes a lot of sense. The fee structure is another that we think makes a lot of sense. So from an overall perspective, we look at what you're doing. You're accepting the risks, and you understanding the risks that you're accepting, and the way that you're going about doing it makes sense.
Do you want to elaborate more about why you're not enthusiastic about it?
It goes to the idea that Jerry talked about, kind of the Goldilocks price of energy, right? If it rises too high, the opportunity will dissipate. Mm-hmm. But again, that is mitigated by the optionality of the drawdowns. If it falls once you're in it, if it falls before you're in it, that's a good thing. It will provide you with more opportunity. If it falls once you're in it, that leads to distress on your investment. Yeah. Again, that is mitigated by two things: the optionality of the drawdown, right? If it falls, you'll exercise that option if you're not in it, and the senior structure of the debts that you got, and the high level of collateral of the debts that you guys are going to be investing in.
And did you have concerns about us being both in a first and, more importantly, in a second position? Did that come into, or did you feel like the fact that they're ensure their adequate reserves, regardless, were fine?
So it's a more conservative, you guys will be investing in a more conservative part of the capital structure. Mm-hmm. So that is a mitigating factor to potential credit risk.
Now, the money that we're not going to be giving yet, are we losing out on opportunity costs, or do I have to put that money in the bank to hold on to at a low interest rate?
No. The money remains invested. If they don't draw $1, we remain 100% invested. So the dollars are always invested with another manager. To the extent they make capital calls, we'll draw it down probably from our debt managers to fund this.
Okay. And I think you pointed out, but it's important, you're only paying on invested capital, not committed capital.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to Scott's point, we probably differ about the degree of the opportunity in aggregate. I think the implementation, we can kind of concur, it is a good solid implementation here. This comes back to, we are not in the risk avoidance business. We are in the risk acceptance when it's prudent to do so business. And given what's going on with the energy space, I will tell you that we spent months on this. Yeah, we went down a long way on a number of funds and ultimately just said no. It was too narrowly focused. We couldn't understand personnel risk or organizational risk. We didn't think they had the oil expertise. It was it's one of these things that just because there's an opportunity set available doesn't mean it's prudent for us to take advantage of it. But here we felt like we had the terms aligned, the personnel were robust enough, the relationship was pre-existing, and we could capitalize on that. And we, quite frankly, had good and candid discussions with the firm. To Jerry's point, you know, you characterize it as Goldilocks. I characterize it as probably a little bit wider. But I mean, there are certainly scenarios where dollars don't get deployed, mm-hmm. and there are scenarios where dollars do get deployed, and we don't get our expected outcome. Well, that's true in every investment here.
No guarantees.
And that's why we didn't want necessarily equity exposure. We thought that was too much of a downside. We didn't want the commodity exposure necessarily. They talked about hedging out during the duration of their loan. Again, prudent to do so. Nothing we do is riskless, but we thought it was a good trade-off.
One thing that occurs to me, sorry for interrupting, one thing that occurs to me is that, you know, this is your opportunistic bucket. You look for, what our philosophy is, you look for those fat pitches, right? Those things that are really driven by dislocation and circumstances where other people are getting out because of consequences that don't affect you guys. And that exists today in this space. And it also occurs to me that you guys have not accessed this opportunistic bucket, I think, since the credit crisis.
Yeah.
Right? So I mean, that says a lot about how selective you are in looking at these opportunities.
I wanted to ask Tim to walk us through how the 20% would be calculated and paid with maybe a couple of scenarios. The ideal one, of course, is that on each sale of a holding by the fund, we continue to make a profit, and obviously they take 20% of that versus the somewhere along the way towards the end of the fund lifespan, things go south and we have a number of losses that were not anticipated. Talk about how that 20% is calculated.
Yeah, right? Within the private equity industry, you know, the headlines of 2 and 20 mask infinite array of how that's actually manifested in individual funds, which I'm beginning to appreciate more and more the more deals I see. It's kind of astounding how creative people can be with their fee structures, probably because we're looking at them. This one is on what's called a European waterfall. So this one is on, they're going to have a basket of dollars to deploy. They've got a two-year investment period, so whatever number of dollars they deploy during a two-year investment period, they have to then during the management period invest it, sell it off, return 100% of our investment, return a 7% preferred return, and then they get to participate on that 20% upside above, you know, that. So all the dollars have to come back to us first. It's not on a deal-by-deal basis. It's on a portfolio basis. It's called the European waterfall. The American waterfall would be on the deal-by-deal basis. And then you have the clawback issue where if it goes south at the end, then you've got to deal with all these reserves and these clawbacks. Quite frankly, it's messy, and I'm too lazy to actually try to get into that. I prefer simplicity. I prefer something I can actually track dollars in, dollars out. There's just fewer hiding places for there to be malfeasance.
So there is the potential that if everything goes south in the last couple of years, what had been overall fund gain in the first few years becomes a loss, and we may not be able to offset the loss against the preceding gain.
In this case, if that were to happen, they don't receive any carried interest because they don't receive carried interest until all the dollars are returned to the limited partners and the preferred return is returned to the limited partners. They get the management fee in the interim, but they don't get any carried interest.
So that is effectively a reserve, a liability, if you will, but it's held by the fund. The obligation to pay the 20%. Until we have gotten 100% of
whenever I look at these, I always prefer this structure. You give me everything I committed, you give me that back. You give me my 7% preferred or 8% preferred, whatever the preferred return is, I get that back. The dollars are actually here. They've transacted at our custodial bank. It's housed here. Then we can share this participation in the upside from that point forward.
One thing to note on the return dollars when we talk about the investment, that includes the management fees. So while we pay management fees on the called capital, they have to return those management fees to us before the 7% return is calculated. So they have to earn their fees.
So essentially that management fee becomes an operating loan that has to be returned.
Okay. What could possibly go wrong?
A lot, which is why we've gone through all this to try and mitigate the downside.
I hear you. All right. Well, just to move this along, unless there are other questions, I'm going to move the recommendation. This was a fascinating analysis. I appreciated the report and the depth of it. It took me more than one pass at it, I'll tell you that. As you can tell by the questions I had today, I was still a little bit perplexed by the investment. It's intriguing. I think it's worth doing in the opportunistic space, and so I'm going to move the recommendation.
I just wanted to make a quick comment on this. Normally, you're used to seeing we come to you with investments of, you know, say up to $50 million, depending on the manager's discretion, that kind of thing. This is the first one that we're bringing to you that's between $75 and $125 million based on staff discretion, and there's a reason for that. And I just wanted Tim to talk to that point for a minute before.
Sure. Basically, what we're saying here, implicit in that, is this is a fast-moving market. This is a closed-end fund, but it's going to be open. You know, there's going to be chances to invest between now and kind of year-end. What we heard about was, you know, if we have a kind of a tipping point, it's probably around this October time frame. So if everything stays as it is today, or we get the price of oil recovering, or we get a flood of capital in that, you know, causes less distress in the market, we would go in at the $75 million level. If we see a material, if the Goldilocks scenario works out, where there's basically richer hunting grounds because there's more distress in the market, then we would bring it up maybe, you know, somewhere north of 75, somewhere south of $125 million. But we just wanted that flexibility to respond to that market environment. This is the band, you know, there's a lot of dynamism in this market. It's going to be a fast-moving market, potentially. It's probably going to be zero movement until it suddenly moves kind of thing. And we just said, you know, this is the upper and lower bound of how we would think about this opportunity set.
Yeah, it seemed like a reasonable bookend to me.
Does it make sense to approve 125 subject to your discretion? Isn't that another way of saying it, so that there is a clear approval of the entire amount?
We can do it that way as well. What I don't want necessarily is, I don't want to negotiate on the 125 up front. I think the 75 is our base case, and it could increase from there. There's also a chance that something dramatic happens between now and when we get the contract negotiated that would cause us to come back to the board. I don't think that's going to happen, candidly.
By negotiate, you mean with Angela Gordon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, can you do no less than 75 and no more than 125, put a cap on it?
On the motion? My recommendation to the board is to approve a range of 75 to 125 million subject to staff.
That's my motion.
Second.
Discussion?
Sure.
I have a couple of reservations. One is the 150 basis points, even though it's on the invested. To me, isn't that the highest basis points we're paying for any fund?
No.
That we're investing in? Where else is it higher?
A number of the private equity funds are still at 2% on the legacy funds. The venture capitals can be at 2.5%.
Okay. Yeah. Then that puts me a little more at ease.
And those are all uncommitted.
Yeah.
Those are all uncommitted, not invested. Yeah.
And this is going to end up being about 1% of the fund in assets, right?
Potentially, yeah.
Potentially, if it goes the full.
Well, if it goes to the full 125 and they have it all committed.
The Amherst thing, right? Do you remember the Amherst thing, when it folded on us, the investment back, it was probably 8 years ago. Was that 1% of the fund? Wasn't that 1% of the fund? You and I were here. And I just can't, yes. Was it, I just remember, was it Ames Amherst?
AIM.
Yes.
The public equity manager.
Yeah, that was 1% of the fund. I think it was around.
It might have been. No, it was more than that.
At that time, it was about more than that.
I think it was close to 5% of the fund.
I just remember that was really hard to climb back out of. We did, but it was it was really whoa. So, do you perceive us? If this bellies up and we have 0.75% of the fund invested in it, will that hurt the fund a whole lot, or do you think we can recover?
Well, if we have 0.75%, let's say we have 1% of the fund invested in it, and it gets wiped out. Pretty draconian scenario, but it's possible. we're going to have a 1% hit to the fund. Can we climb back out of a 1% hit to the fund? Yeah, we kind of do it on a routine basis.
Well, it's interesting to think about, right? If you lose 100% of this fund, there's stuff going on in the market while the rest of your fund is going to be down 25 or 30%.
That's true, too.
Yeah, it's kind of the least of our concerns about that.
Noticed, Jerry.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and the other mitigating factor here is this is going to be an investment that's at least partially backed by hard assets rather than financial assets.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The financial assets can go to zero quickly. The hard assets, the fact that we're going to be more senior in the debt structure and be able to foreclose, again, not easy, but the fact that you can do it, those reserves are going to have some value.
Yeah, that was critical to me, and I think the chair's questions on that point really kind of clarified what the value, if you're going to foreclose, what you wind up with is what appears to be reserves that are valued on a very, very, very conservative basis, net of what some company might value it at.
Yeah.
And that's the asset you have, and then apparently, at least according to those in the oil patch, that's something that has a lot of liquidity in the sense that it can be marketed. So to me, there that downside had at least a softer landing potential.
The other thing I think I need to stress here is, which was touched on only anecdotally, in the presentation, was there's going to be a 5-7% current cash flow. So when there's a 5-7% current cash flow, we're essentially de-risking the portfolio every 6 months. 5-7% is coming back. We have less capital at risk every 6 months. It's not necessarily a contractual cash flow. It's a yield goal. But the fact that they're going to be passing that through to the limited partners in real time rather than waiting towards the end of the fund, we're de-risking it along the way.
How comfortable are you with Todd Dittman?
With Todd Dittman?
Yes.
He's the reason we're pursuing this fund.
We
would further recommend that when there's an on-site, we do it in Houston with Todd.
Want to do that. All right.
In the summer months.
Yes.
That's probably when it's going to be.
So when I recommend Houston in July and I recommend Minneapolis in January, you know I'm serious about investment.
Yeah. That's why we love you, Tim.
Deborah, do you have
a... I was just going to say I would volunteer to go to Houston for the site visit in July just to understand the investment.
Okay. There is a motion and a second, right?
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion? And subject to all the due diligence and legal and everything, the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you, gentlemen, for bringing this to our attention.
Pat, thank you, too.
Absolutely.
Breaking and bringing.
We didn't go into crude by rail issues, but I figured that
should. Well, they're talking about upstream. They didn't spend a lot of time talking about transportation, but that's always interesting, too.
Yeah,
with
pension attorneys.
What, there wasn't an actuary
commission? Scott's next presentation, item 7, could take a while. A suggestion was made that we break for lunch.
Sure.
Okay,
we'll be happier if we're well fed.
Lunch here?
It's the mom rule that comes into, you feed the kids and then they're not as crabby on the vacation.
Okay, mom, thanks.
Yeah.
Can we do the comments, trustee, all that comments now?
Sure, we'll do that.
Okay. Take us till then.